Breeze is an easy-to-use yet powerful church management software that's used by more than 500 UMC churches to manage their database, stay connected with their congregations, manage events and check in children, and offer online and text giving. Best of all, it's only $50 a month. You can learn more about Breeze and start a free 30-day trial at breezechms.com. That is BREEZECHMS.com.
Thank you to everybody for joining us for this episode of the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast. My name is Dan Wunderlich. I'm a United Methodist pastor, and today we're bringing you the next installment of our occasional feature called How We Work. On these special episodes, we feature interviews with real-life United Methodists digging into the practical details of how they do the work of church marketing and communications. Today, it's my pleasure to welcome a friend and former colleague from the Florida Conference, Reverend Nathan Adams. He's currently the lead pastor of Park Hill United Methodist Church in Denver, Colorado. Nathan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dan. It's great to be with you today.
Well, Nathan, why don't we start? I know you well, but obviously our listeners don't. So let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself, your church, and your ministry's context.
Sure. So my name is Nathan Adams. I'm currently serving, as Dan shared, as the lead pastor at Park Hill United Methodist here in Denver, Colorado. I'm an ordained elder, membership still in the Florida Conference where I was ordained. I served as an associate pastor in Tallahassee for 5 years and as pastor at Fulford UMC down in North Miami Beach for 3 before coming out here to Park Hill in 2017. Park Hill UMC is a multiracial, multi-ethnic church here in Colorado, about 110 or so years old. I've been doing great social justice work, putting, as we say, our walking the talk or putting our faith into action for quite some time, a long history of social justice work, one of the first churches to integrate here in Denver back in the late 50s, early 60s. And I've really since then been trying to do our best to take and to share God's love with as many folks in as many places as we can.
And was it that history of the church that sort of drew you to this opportunity?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a phone call back in 17 about possibility of coming out here and got to hear about Park Hill's history and really who they are, what they're doing. So the congregation, as I said, integrated in the late 50s and 60s. We can get into that story. It really is actually quite timely with some of the work that we're doing now. And then in the last 10 years or so, has become part of the Reconciling Ministries Network, has a Jewish synagogue that is housed in our building that we're partners with, Temple Micah, has been a sanctuary church, been hosting women in our building for about 7 years as part of what's known as the Women's Homelessness Initiative. And the list kind of goes on and on and on. Really putting faith into action, walking the talk, as we talk about a lot of times, and who the people are, multiracial, multicultural church, to me, a kind of a representation of what I hope the kingdom of God will look like, what I believe it will.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will get into some of that stuff soon, but let's stay a little light and breezy here in the intro before we get into the heavy stuff. How do you all do the work of church marketing at your church? Is this something that you handle? Do you have staff or volunteers? Is it a mix of all that? How does that process look at your church?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm a little humbled, Dan, that you're asking us about what we do as far as marketing. I think what we do works for us, but I don't think that we're by any means experts in this field. And so it's a mix of all of the above, depending on which medium we're talking about. We have a staff member who does a lot of our internal marketing within the church community itself. What's going on, when, what are we doing, how to get involved. More social media, more marketing to folks that aren't yet part of our community. We have a lot of volunteers. I do a lot of that work or some of that work as well, whether it's socials, which is a lot of what we do to try to be out in the community more intentionally that we might call marketing. It's a mix of folks that do it.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because honestly, that's part of what this series is about. Is we have plenty of episodes where we bring in people who we consider to be experts. And obviously, I'm bringing you here because I think you can offer value to our listeners. But this series is really, it's not about finding the people who are doing it perfectly. It's about how does a real United Methodist in a real United Methodist ministry do this work? Because it does look different every place. And sometimes when we bring in the people who give best practices are great, but sometimes best practices aren't best everywhere. So who knows what folks will hear in what you share with us today. But maybe how about you, when you think about church marketing and communications, telling the story of your church from a 30,000-foot level, how would you describe this challenge and this opportunity?
Yeah, so I think knowing who you are as a church, knowing who you are as a leader, or what your role is within the life of the church, and then telling people about that, or showing people, maybe that's a better way to even talk about it. You know, how do we show the community that we're a multiracial, multicultural church that takes social justice seriously, that really believes that when, you know, we say that Christ calls us to love all people, that we mean all people. And so then how do we show the community that? And whether we call that marketing or not, I think that's what we're trying to do. So who are we? What's our story? How do we share that and show that to folks? And honestly, you know, opportunities like this day and are part of that, right? So when someone says, hey, we want to pick your brain on X, Y, and Z, or we want to ask you a question about what you're doing or why you're doing it, being able to say yes and taking the time to make that happen is part of that.
That's awesome. Well, we certainly appreciate your time today. And let me ask you kind of about the two sides of the coin. What do you love about this kind of work? And maybe what's the most challenging part of this work, or what's the most frustrating piece in the puzzle for you?
Sure. I think I do a lot of our graphics designs, things that we went, like a lot of churches, I would imagine, you know, we had very little to no existence when it came to virtual platforms, live streaming, that type of thing prior to COVID. My former colleague served as our associate pastor, Reverend Angie Cotsmore, got us up onto YouTube, did an excellent job of that. She got reappointed last summer, and so I kind of took over a lot of that work that she was doing. And so I really enjoy getting to learn what we're doing on YouTube and making graphics on Canva and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy that. I also, at the same time, I think, you know, we struggle with, you know, who really should be the best person in our organization to be doing that, both from a talent standpoint, but also just a more structure, you know, what person, whether it's a volunteer or staff person. And we haven't figured that piece out. It's fun, I think, trying to figure out YouTube and, you know, what it's looking for. And when we hit it and things go really well, and we're like, yeah, that was great. Like, look at the response we got. And then the opposite, right, can be frustrating. Like, that was really, really provocative or interesting. And YouTube or Facebook or nobody seemed to really pay attention to that. So that can be frustrating. I think, as I imagine other folks have said, you know, we feel like we over communicate and over market a lot of times and still have people going like, huh, when's that happening?
Yeah.
Are you sure that you told us that? And so that's always frustrating. I think that, you know, I'm biased. I hope a lot of other leaders you interview would say the same things. But I think the content of what we're doing as a church, whether that's worship or social justice work or small group classes, whatever it might be, like, is excellent. And so it can get frustrating when it's like, man, we're doing really great stuff, but it doesn't feel like people are know about it or paying attention to it. So what do we do, you know, with that type of thing?
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Man, what you're sharing is so relatable. You know, so for those volunteers and staff members in our audience, just know how valuable you are. And then for all the pastors who are also doing this work, spending time on Canva, just know you're not alone. Also, you know, know that finding those people that can help are great. You know, I think the challenge for me, my undergrad degree is in advertising. I love graphic design, but I also have a communications director. And so my problem is I find myself doing graphic design when I'm stuck or I don't want to do the work I should be doing.
Sure.
And then when you're the pastor and you don't have any help, sometimes you may find yourself doing that work, wishing that you were doing something else, quote unquote, more valuable, sure. But they're all pieces of a puzzle.
Absolutely. Yep. All critical for sure.
Well, this summer we did an unofficial mini series sort of on non-digital church marketing. We figured after a year of basically being forced online, it wouldn't be a bad idea to spend some of 2021 intentionally jump-starting those parts of our brains again. And obviously, digital ministry is not going away, and digital can be a great channel to let people know what you're doing in the quote-unquote real world. But there are things we can do beyond just thinking social media. In addition, we've always talked on this podcast about how church marketing is so much more than just telling people when and where to show up for your events. It's about telling the story of your church. It's about saying to your community, we care about what you care about. And this really, for me, is what brought you and your church to mind. So you sort of gave us a quick list there at the beginning, but talk to us a little bit about the kinds of justice work that you're doing in your community and how it can be, in the best sense of the word, the sort of least icky and manipulative sense of the word, how justice work could actually be church marketing.
Yeah. And so I think what I shared earlier, like, how do you show people who you are? And actions, you know, so oftentimes speak louder than words or graphics or whatever else you might think about when we talk about marketing. And so we really take seriously that our, you know, our mission is, because Christ calls us to love all people, we will do this through diversity and discipleship, acceptance, social justice, and mission. And so we try to say, well, what does that actually look like for us? How do we actually say, here's what we value, and then go out into the community and live those values out? And it's messy. It can be really messy sometimes, but yeah. We try to do that. Try to do that all the time, and try to do that with our different ministries or programs that we have in the life of our church. And part of it, I think, is, you know, when I was invited to come out to serve as lead pastor, I was told, you know, we want somebody who has some experience in helping the church connect to the community. And what I've told folks, you know, probably throughout my ministry as a pastor, is I don't know how else to be a pastor except to be a part of the community and to help the church to do the same thing. And so what's going on in the community or the larger world that people care about? And the truth is, right, is if it's going on, hopefully, if it's going on in the community or the larger world, you know, our church is part of the community and comprised of people who live in the community. So that means there's folks that care about what's happening or are being impacted by what's happening. And so, yeah, the Park Hill has a long history of being an integrated church. The story goes that back in the late 50s and 60s, our neighborhood, which is Park Hill, the Park Hill neighborhood, was being blockbusted by real estate agents trying to prevent integration into that particular neighborhood. Seven or so churches got together and said they wanted to do anti-blockbusting efforts to help integrate the neighborhood and be an example, not only to really the city, but really to the country, that folks of different races and backgrounds could live together and have homes, you know, next door to one another and really be an integrated community. And so seven churches got together. They formed the Park Hill Action Committee, which has since become the registered neighborhood organization for the neighborhood, and really got together to put efforts together to make sure that the neighborhood would be integrated. And those worked largely, although there are some issues going on now around gentrification, you know, 50, 60 years later. Sure. Reversing some of that work. But one of the pastors that was part of that was the pastor at Park Hill at that time. His name's Reverend Dr. Carlton Babbs. He was long-term pastor at Park Hill. And he took that super seriously. I don't know the history of the other clergy or churches involved, but he actually went back to Park Hill Methodist at that time and said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to integrate. And he, you know, the legacy is that he went, you know, door to door and identified African Americans within the community to invite intentionally himself to come and to be a part of the congregation. Some of those families are still a part of our congregation today.
Oh, wow.
And so that kind of, you know, we're rooted in that history. You know, we're going to, you know, not just talk about integrating, not just talk about being in relationship or in community or living with or in a neighborhood with folks that are different than us, but we're actually going to put it into practice. And so before I got to Park Hill in the years before I arrived, they really put that into action kind of on hyper mode, if you will. The church invited Temple Micah, as I mentioned, which is a former Jewish synagogue, to have space and to make their home in our building. That's probably about 7-8 years ago. Around that same time, began to be a part of the Women's Homelessness Initiative, which is a coalition of religious organizations and are part of Denver that take turns every night housing unhoused women and providing a meal for them and a safe space for them to sleep overnight. So I've been doing that for about 7 years before COVID hit. Congregation, voted to become a Reconciling Ministries Network congregation. And then, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Most recently, of course, some may know, I know you know, Dan, we voted and are moving forward with becoming a temporary safe outdoor space, which means beginning today, like literally as we're recording.
Oh, wow.
Folks are moving into our parking lot where tents are set up, about 34 tents. We'll have up to 40 folks that from now until the end of 2021, the end of this year, will be making their home in these this tent. It's an enclosed space, totally secure, staffed 24/7. The residents will be able to receive all types of different services on site. And it's really an opportunity for folks experiencing homelessness not have to worry about, you know, where am I laying my head down? Where's my stuff? Is it safe? What will be there when I get back from work or from seeking medical attention or out, you know, getting lunch or whatever it might be, that they know that they can go back and there's a safe place for them. They'll have opportunity to hopefully get some more permanent housing as well. And so, and the list really goes on and on and on, but it really is, in my belief, my understanding, what we talk about, these are all like ways of putting our faith into action and showing and telling our story. I don't think anybody would talk about marketing and using right. language around these things, but it really is, right? Because folks are getting to know who we are, what we're about, what our values are. We marched this past Saturday in Denver's Juneteenth parade, one of only two churches, as far as I'm aware of. You know, as we're marching along, people are saying, you know, we're so grateful for who you are and what you're doing, for the work that you all are doing. So people are aware, are learning. If they didn't, they're continuing to know who we are, what we're up to, and what we're about. And really, right, it is pointing ultimately, in our opinion, my opinion, to Christ, right? It all starts with our big why, if you will. Well, why? Because Christ calls us to love all folks. So why are you doing this? Why do you, you know, why do you house those that are unhoused? Why are you integrated? Why are you feeding people? Why are you mentoring students? We can talk about some of those programs, but why do you welcome folks that are part of the LGBTQI community? Why interfaith work, so forth and so on? Well, it's all because Christ calls us to do this work, to love all.
And I think that's, first off, that's amazing, Nathan. Y'all are doing incredible work, and I'm so glad you're getting to share about it here. That really leads into my next question, which is when you talk about this, whether it's through your social media or just with people on the street or just, you know, with different organizations around town, there is a way to talk about this work that is healthy, contributes to the work, and respects the dignity of the people you serve. And then there's a way to talk about this work that's the equivalent of, like, you know, the mission trip photos. That's like, look at me with these poor people and they're so happy to see me. Like, how do you tell the story in a respectful way that respects the dignity of the people? But also, you know, does help people see the value that your church brings?
Yeah. It's a fine line, right? Telling, you know, what is our story and what is the story of the folks that we're walking alongside with. And, you know, we won't get too deep, right? But it's probably the right answer is, well, it's probably all of our stories collectively, yeah. Our story collectively. You know, one of the things, we had lots of angry, I mean, I'll just name it, lots of angry folks when we announced that we were going to be a temporary safe outdoor space for lots of different reasons. One of the things we got accused of, and I got accused of by some of those angry folks, is that, you know, we were out seeking media attention and granting interviews and trying to get attention for this work. And all except for one interview that we've done related to the temporary safe outdoor space, which was a mutual friend of mine and the nonprofit organization that will actually be running the site. Every other interview that we've done or media request has been exactly that. It's been a request, people coming to us, asking for clarification, asking for why we're doing this, and, you know, our motives behind it, and then trying to get understanding of what the program, whatever it might be, would look like. And so I think that's part of at least my personal process on this has been, you know, we haven't, what we've done so far have largely been folks that have asked us for attention. And then, you know, renaming, as I said, why we're doing this. You know, the back of our t-shirts that we have say exactly that, because Christ calls us to love all, we love our neighbors. And that means all of our neighbors. And so this is a way for us, you know, we try to keep that, the big why at the forefront of, you know, we're doing this as a church, as a congregation, because Christ calls us to do it. I think there's a powerful, there's so much power in saying yes. This all came about with the temporary safe outdoor space, with a group that wanted to work in affordable housing or do some work as a church in affordable housing. And that kind of did some legwork around what were some different options that would really be feasible. And this seemed like one that we would be able to do. And so telling, you know, really telling that story, being willing to keep the focus not on us, as far as like the work that's actually being done. We can tell the why, but then, you know, these are lives, these are 40 folks with a temporary safe outdoor space, as I mentioned, that are going to have a safe place for a little over 6 months to live. And that's powerful and important. So trying to keep the focus on them is part of that as well. So.
Absolutely. And let me ask you, obviously, the mission of the United Methodist Church is to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. And that is not equivalent to number of people in worship on Sunday morning, even though oftentimes many of us equate the two. And so I'm not specifically asking you, does doing this kind of work increase attendance on Sunday morning? But let me ask you kind of both sides of that coin. Sure. Does doing this kind of work and telling your story increase connection and engagement with your church through some of the traditional channels like Sunday morning worship or life group participation, but also maybe in just some of the personal relationships you have with other organizations or community leaders who maybe don't show up on Sunday morning? Do you still feel like it's giving you the opportunity to sort of call them to discipleship?
Yes, would be the short answer, right? Yes, absolutely. Our motivation is taking the love of Christ out to people. I would say similar to my understanding of God's grace would be, you know, God's grace is available for each and every one of us. How we respond to that grace is probably up to all of us. There are lots of things that go into that. And so I'd say the same thing with some of the work that we're doing, right? We're not by any means hosting a temporary safe outdoor space, or we're not by any means all the other programs and ministries that we talked about, doing them so that folks will join our church or become a member or end up professing faith in Christ. If those things happen, all the better. But we believe strongly, you know, we're building and are part of and responsible for helping to build God's kingdom now and forevermore. And so God cares about people's lives now and forevermore. And so therefore we have to care about folks' life now and forevermore. And so, yeah, I think I would love to know, you know, a way to measure, you know, like, how did somebody learn about our congregation, or how did someone decide to attend a worship service, or how did someone decide to be a part of a small group, or, you know, come and be a part of the social justice work? You know, what was their motivation? What was their connection point? We don't have a good way to measure that and to directly see that impact. But yes, you know, like I said, absolutely, right? If people don't know about you, you're going to come and be a part of the work more intentionally that you're doing, right? If folks never hear about Christ, then there's no way they're ever going to, you know, profess faith or to be a follower in Christ. And so these various ways that we're out in the community connecting with people, you know, there are doors that are opening. You know, we talk, I think, a lot of times about on-ramps and those type of things. We don't use that language necessarily at Park Hill.
Right.
But certainly these are places where folks are showing up and have, you know, some interactions. We hosted a prayer vigil with Together Colorado, which is a community, faith-based community organizing group here in the state of Colorado, last week for the Temporary Safe Outdoor prayer vigil. And, you know, it was hosted by several other organizations, and 150 plus folks showed up when it was 100 degrees last Tuesday morning. And 30 of those folks, you know, 30 of those folks are from our congregation, and the rest are from other congregations and from the community and things like that. So yeah, absolutely. I mentioned the Juneteenth parade. One of the cameramen for one of the local digital papers was at Juneteenth, and I said hi to him. Hey, Pastor Nate, this is the third time I've seen you this week for something. So I mean, those touch points, right, of where building relationships, and that's what our faith is about in the end, right, is a relationship with Christ and relationships with one another, and relationships just don't they're not transactions and they don't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And so all of these different touch points for our church are ways to continue to share love with folks. And if they lead to relationships, more deeper relationships, if you will, fantastic, whether that's with us or if that's with Christ, then great. But we have that faith, obviously, that the Holy Spirit is moving in the midst of all these two, and we're just one of those touch points for folks.
Well, let me ask you, and I'll remind you, this is a How We Work episode. You are here to share your experience. I'm not expecting like three organized points or anything like that. But you mentioned that you have faced some anger and some negative feedback and pushback to some of the programs that you've done, which is going to happen in church in general. If we are living the life of the gospel, we are going to face pushback one way or another, whether it's for justice work or whether it's for other things that we do. Do you have any words of advice or encouragement for the pastor or the church communicator out there who is sort of hit with negative feedback? Any tips for graciously accepting it or responding it, or how to filter what to respond to and what to let go?
Yeah. And I'll preface my words with, I'm perceived anyway, I'm approaching 40, but I'm perceived as a young African-American male. And so I want to preface my comments by saying that what I might do might be differently for folks who don't identify the same way that I do, or certainly for folks who aren't identified by others in the same way that I am. I think that makes a difference. And I absolutely believe that I've been treated differently because of the color of my skin. So let's just name that, particularly with the temporary safe outdoor space and the way that folks have pushed back on. So what we've tried to do, particularly with this temporary safe outdoor space, although it would be the same when we had folks in our building living there. We haven't talked a lot about that, but we hosted folks that were in jeopardy of being deported by the federal government and sanctuary in our building over the last couple of years. And then prior to my time, when Park Hill was making decisions around inviting Temple Micah and becoming a reconciling congregation, and certainly hundreds of people in the late 50s and 60s left the congregation when it integrated.
Yeah.
And so I think it goes back, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it goes back to, that big why. Why are you doing what you're doing? What are the, why did you get to that point in your decision making? And if that is solid, then, sticking to that, right? Being determined that, no, we really believe this is what God is calling us to do. That can be dangerous, obviously. Much great harm has been done in the name of God. But really believing that, no, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. Surrounding yourself as best you can with like-minded people that can support you and encourage you. That's been a big deal for me personally over the last couple of months since we've announced the temporary safe outdoor space. Realizing, I say this tongue-in-cheek, but I think it's true, like the Gospels end with Jesus alive, depending on which version you read it. Right. Mark's Gospel. But in order to have Jesus, alive on Easter morning or in the Ascension or wherever part you're reading at the end of the Gospels, those stories don't happen without Good Friday.
Right.
Jesus was killed for who he was and what he believed and what he did. I'm certainly not trying to create martyrs and don't particularly want to be a martyr, but we follow somebody that was crucified. He ticked off people because of his radical love, I would say, his radical inclusion, his radical economic system. And so if we're trying to follow him, then we shouldn't be too surprised when we are upsetting people. And there's lots of other examples of that, right? Being willing to accept pain and, the least of these and the covenant prayer that Wesley, made so famous. And this would go on. So what we've done, what we did, particularly with the temporary safe outdoor space, we tried to communicate, once the decision went public, we tried to communicate with as many people as quickly as we could. We got lots of emails and phone calls and texts and other things, both from supporters and others that were not so supportive. We tried to entertain and to spend time as email or in person or in meetings or community sessions, listening sessions with all of those folks. And then it became, for our team, became quite clear, several weeks after we did a lot of that work, that there were just some people that were never going to be supportive and frankly, that want the program to fail. They told us as much. And so at that point, we stopped engaging with those folks. We stopped responding. And so that would probably be the other folks. And I think that's where, for me, when some of the attacks were veiled racism or very old racist attacks, I stopped engaging. It was not any more fruitful, if you will. We use some churchy language, right? It wasn't fruitful for us to continue to try to engage those folks.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, let's, I want to jump back to something you said at the very, very beginning, as we start to transition toward the end of this episode. You talked about how you can't imagine being a pastor that's not connected to the community.
Absolutely.
And so let's say that there's a pastor out there who's either just moved, or maybe they're a staff member who's new to this role in their community, or maybe they've been in this role for a couple years and they know that they're not as connected as they should be or could be, or maybe even it's the end of COVID and, you know, it's been a year and a half, or, you know, it's really not the end of COVID, but you know what I mean? We're transitioning out of it. Things are starting to open up again. It's maybe been a year to a year and a half since they've been really present and plugged in into the community. Can you just give any, like some, if you, Nathan, were moving again, let's say some of my very selfish prayers come true and you get sent back to Florida and you start at a new church in a new town, a new city you've never been in, or let's just keep it, let's say when you went to Denver and you're in the place that you love now, but when you first get to a place where you're looking to build new connections or deeper connections, do you have any practical advice for folks who maybe aren't quite sure where to start or what doors to knock on?
Sure. First of all, I feel like we should have a conversation about when two people are praying for two different. No, I'm playing. yeah, I think, man. So schools would be a place. Where's the local school? I do a lot. I'm a bit of a nerd. I'm not a huge Mission Insight user, although I think there's great work there. But I'm a big studier of the community to where I'm moving to. So I started reading when I moved to Denver. I started reading the Denver Post online, trying to get a sense for the city, for the community, what's important. I was researching neighborhoods long before I moved here, several months out, trying to figure out. This was the first time that my wife and I had a housing allowance in my career. So we got to pick where we were going to move. And so researching neighborhoods, trying to figure out where it made sense for us to be able to live, how close we wanted to be to the church. I'm a big component, I think, of living in the community where you serve. Maybe not that I don't live in the exact neighborhood of where my church is. That's largely because it's super expensive, but I'm 7 minutes away. So by all intents and purposes, I live here in Denver. I'm super close. I run by my church quite frequently in my other life as a marathoner, if you will. And so then, so researching the media, getting an idea of the neighborhood, researching the schools, where are the schools? Who are the leaders in the schools? Can you take some time to go and meet the principal or some of the other leaders? For me at Park Hill, part of it was also going to my congregation, right? And asking the leaders within the congregation, who are the people within the city that I need to know? Who do I need to meet? Who should I go and introduce myself to? Park Hill is a large enough church that folks in the larger community know about the church long before I got here. And so folks would give me an audience that maybe wouldn't have happened otherwise just because of who the church is. And then I think starting to, what are you passionate about? I have an education background and a music background. And so going to a local elementary school makes perfect sense for me. I love children and think that it's important to have a relationship with a local elementary school or a local school if you're able to. And so probably leading from who you are, what are your interests? I'm a runner. I haven't gotten super involved in the running community here, but that is another place, where I've met friends and been able to be connected in that way. And so what are the organizations that if you're listening to that you're interested in, that you might already be involved in your current appointment or current position, and then go and find those same groups wherever it might be that you're being appointed. And I think it's kind of getting ingrained into that community's culture. What are the important things? This is Bronco country through and through, right?
So, yeah.
Starting to learn about who are the Broncos, what matter, what can you say, can you not say, who are the folks within your church that care about such things, who are those that don't? But I think that's been a big deal is, kind of getting knowledgeable what's going on so you can speak intelligently about the issues and about the people and the things that are happening in the community. And so I had a member, frankly, who took me under his wing and he served on a local nonprofit board and said, hey, Pastor Nathan, you're going to be recruited to serve on different boards. And I want you to come and serve on this board because of the folks that are on it and the work that it's doing. And this would be great for you to start getting to meet people and to network. And this was probably within the first 6 months of being out here. And so I think really leaning on the folks that are within the congregation itself, especially as you're moving, that they know whether it's a small, rural setting or suburban, or if it's a large city like Denver is, there are going to be folks, they might not know everybody for sure, but they're going to know folks that you need to get in front of and start meeting, start listening to. And that's probably the first thing, right? We didn't even talk about that with marketing, but man, you got to listen, right? You got to listen for what's going on in the community. Where are the places where there's movement, where there's excitement, where there's passion, where are the places where there are pain? Listen for that, pay attention to that. And then we can begin to respond to it, to be a part of it, to try to help however we might be able to do as a church.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, Nathan, let's close with a lightning round. Yeah. So quick questions, quick answers. Outside of your home and your church campus, where's your favorite place to get some work done?
Get work done? Probably out on a running trail. So it'd be planning in my head for whatever it might be. Sermon, worship, small group, a meeting, what have you. But probably out on a trail.
Are there any apps, gadgets, or tools that you can't live without?
Everything. No, Canva is huge. It's super cheap and super easy to use. We mentioned that earlier. Canva, I'm a big fan on YouTube. I wish I could spend more time in their Creators Academy, getting to learn that platform better. Otherwise, nothing else is popping up. Tick, I use a lot. Those are the main ones.
If a church had $100 to invest in outreach, how would you recommend that they do it?
Buy some food and go to a local festival and give it away and tell folks who you are, what you're about.
Are there any books, podcasts, or other resources you might recommend to the listeners?
I'm going to get his name wrong, so help me, Dan. I know you know him. Is it Kerry Newhoff?
Yeah, Kerry Newhoff. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Kerry Newhoff's. Get his daily email. I've signed up for a couple and done a couple of his classes. And then the one I always say that makes folks laugh, I'm a huge sports fan and I love listening to sports talk. The opening monologue of Colin Cowherd on his show on Fox every day, it's at 10 out here. I think on the East Coast, it's at noon. There is so much wisdom in what he says about leadership, about teamwork, about running an organization that he drops within the first 15 minutes, that if folks would change out coach to pastor or players to congregation or, team to organization or to church organization, that I think is just so wise, so wise.
That's awesome. And similarly related, are there any other churches or businesses or brands that you follow for like trends or that you look to as an example of folks doing well?
Yeah, so similarly, I think, the big tech giants, see what they're doing, what they're about, trying to maybe not copy them because that's kind of hard as a medium-sized church that we are. But what are they paying attention to? Where are they giving attention to? I'm very intrigued right now by all the different streamers that have dropped in the last 2 years or so and what content they're producing and who they're producing it for and who's paying attention to that. So I try to stay abreast of that rather. And then we did a great series, I'm biased, but that was a great series earlier this year on being an anti-racist church. And our perspective was, who are the churches that are kind of a little further down the road, size-wise, integration-wise, than Park Hill is, and so paying attention to them. And so I stumbled upon Garfield Memorial Church, which United Methodist Church outside of Cleveland. And so I've been kind of watching them, paying attention to them. And then in your backyard, I worship regularly online with St. Luke's out of Orlando. And I'm always trying to copy and steal a lot of the great stuff.
Yeah, it's always good when you find a church across the country. But, so none of your local folks are watching, but you know that they do good stuff. That's awesome. And then lastly, Nathan, if anyone wanted to follow your work or reach out and say hi or ask a question, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find Park Hill's socials are all the same. So at Park Hill UMC, so youtube.com/ParkHillUMC, facebook.com/ParkHillUMC. If you want to look me up individually on Facebook, I'm Nathan P. as in Paul. Adams. I'm on Twitter at Running Rev Adams, although I am not the greatest follow. So follow at your own.
That's awesome. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for your time and sharing your experience with us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate the invitation, Dan. Thanks for taking the time and for the opportunity to be with you.
And now, listeners, we want your help in spotlighting the ministries in our church that are making a difference in communities through marketing and communications. Who do you want to hear from and what should we ask them? Email us at podcast@umcom.org. You can, of course, always use that email, podcast@umcom.org, to send us any feedback or topic suggestions you have for the show. We always love hearing from you. And the easiest way to support the show and help other church communicators like yourself find it is by sharing this episode with your friends and colleagues, and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever service you're listening to right now. And did you know that United Methodist Communications is celebrating 80 years of ministry? Your support ensures that the latest denominational news, dynamic stories, and informative articles will continue to connect our global community. Make a tax-deductible donation today at resourceumc.org/giveumcom. That's GIVEUMCOM. Thanks again for listening to the MyCom Church Marketing Podcast.